Mornings, mornings. Morning, Honorable Sukacha.
Morning, Chairperson.
How are you, Honorable Sukacha?
Morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Chair.
Morning. I always try to greet before we start. Do we have all our members present?
Yes, Chair, we do have a quorum. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, it is 9:30. We're going to start at our meeting. Let me welcome everyone to this meeting. That would be all of those who have joined our meeting, whether they be members of the Portfolio Committee on Health, representative of the OHSC, or whether they are members of the media, and of course also our staff. I have noted that we do have representatives of the OHSC already on the platform. Today's meeting, we will be dealing with two items. The one is the annual report of the OHSC, and the second one would be the annual report of the Health Ombud. We know that the Health Ombud is, in a manner of speaking, part of the OHSC, and does derive its funds from its operations from the budget of the OHSC. But they do come and report, give us two different reports. And I must just state that the Health Ombud is busy in another program and will only be with us at about 12:30. And so we will continue with receiving the annual report of the OHSC this morning. Mr. Majalamba, before we continue, can you give me an indication of the attendees and the apologies, please?
Good morning and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Jacobs, Ms. Geller, Mr. Sokacha, Dr. Harvard, Mr. Siwela, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Ms. Chirwa, and Mr. Imam Sheikh. I've received apologies from Dr. Thembe Kwayo, Mr. Van Staden, and Ms. Sugars. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Majalamba. Honorable members, before we continue, I want to remind us of the rules again, as we ought to be doing with every meeting. You're reminded that this virtual meeting is deemed to be in the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitutes a meeting of a committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sitting, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in a sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House and may be ruled upon. All members who have logged in shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute their microphones and only unmute when recognized to speak. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of their screens, which has an option that allows the member to put up his or her hand to raise points of order. The secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order or interjection. We shall now proceed with the business of this morning, and I welcome again the representatives of the Office of Health Standard Compliance. I did note that the chairperson of the board is present, and I was looking for the CEO, but you are all very welcome. Let me then start with the chairperson of the board to introduce the members who are present, and then for you and the OHSC to go straight into your presentation. Thank you.
And
Thank you, and good morning, Honorable Member Dr. Jacobs. And good morning to all Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Health, as well as the board members of the OHSC and the executive managers who are present here in today. It is indeed a pleasure for us, Chair, to be invited to the Portfolio Committee. And I would like to start by introducing the board members that are present today. I am Dr. Ernest Kinoshi. I'm the chairperson of the board. I would love to the chairpersons of the board members who are present to please introduce themselves briefly. You can just unmute and introduce yourself.
Thank you,
Dr. Pienze, go ahead.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and also thank you for Dr. Jacobs and all honourable members present. My name is Maria Pienze, and I am the Chairperson of the Human Resources Committee of the Board. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Can you go to Dr. Singwana?
Thank you, Chairperson. I am Manike Singwana. I'm the board member.
Okay, and Dr. Msibi? Ms. Msibi? Okay, if she's not in, Dr. Msimelane? I think those who are responding, I assume they are still struggling to, they confirmed attendance, Chair, but I'm assuming they're still struggling to connect. Professor Mfenyana?
Thank you, Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Kaya Mfenyana. I'm a board member. Thank you.
Yes. May have missed one or other that maybe in the meeting. I know I've got apologies from the deputy chair, Ms. Muntiwa. Are there any other members of the board present today that have not introduced themselves yet?
Good morning, Chairperson, good morning, members of the Health Portfolio Committee. I'm Dr. Simelane. I'm a member of the board.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Simelane. Chair, we also have the executive, the chief executive officer, Dr. Mdaweni, in the meeting. We have the CFO, Mr. Mapata. We've got Ms. Molekwa, we've got Dr. Jacobs, and also Ms. Tsukudu, the executive manager. But we also have a very important person, the chair, the board secretariat, and head of director, head of governance, and board secretariat and legal services, Ms. Padayachi. We also have Advocate Makhupa Madisa. We've got Mr. Matlakanya and Mr. Kuvuzela. I think we will hand over very soon to the CEO to proceed with the presentation. But just before she presents her presentation, Chair, I think the Office of the Health Standards Compliance is grateful to present its annual report for the period 2020-2021 to the Portfolio Committee on Health. If we can move to the next slide, please. That's right. The Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Health plays an important oversight role in respect of activities of the Office of Health Standards Compliance and the health establishment that the office regulates over. The guidance of the board on the regulatory functions of the OHSC, under very unique and difficult context of the 2019 pandemic, especially because the board, this board was inaugurated right at the beginning of the the onset of the pandemic. So we were under very difficult conditions since our term of office started. But in the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic and the subsequent national lockdowns introduced unprecedented challenges to the Office of Health Standards operations. The inspections of the health establishments and also resolution of complaints were negatively affected as a result of restricted access to health establishments during the lockdowns. The office made appropriate adaptations to ensure the safety of employees of the OHSC and also to return to as much normality as possible in its normal regulatory functions. And the Office of Health Standards is on course now to support strategic initiatives by continuously interrogating universal factors and applicable risks to deliver on its vision of consistent, safe, and quality healthcare for all. The CEO, Dr. Sipiwe Mdaweni, assisted by the management team, will present the 2020-2021 annual report detailing achievements, performance information, the outlook, and also the financial position of the Office of Health Standards Compliance. Over to you, Dr. Mdaweni.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Dr. Kinoshi. I extend greetings to the Chairperson of the Health Portfolio Committee, Dr. Jacobs, as well as all honorable members. On behalf of the Office of Health Standard Compliance, I am going to take the committee through our performance for the financial year 2020-2021. In doing so, I will briefly touch on the mandate of the Office of Health Standard Compliance. We will then delve into the performance information with the accompanying financial information for the financial year. Briefly, just to go through the organogram, the board reports to the Minister of Health. As the chairperson has indicated, the health ombud is functionally located within the Office of Health Standard Compliance. We then have various programs through which we deliver our operations and our services. And as I go through the presentation, I will then highlight some of the operations within the Office of Health Standard Compliance, different units and directorates. The amendment of the National Health Act in 2012 and the promulgation of Chapter 10 of the Act established the Office of Health Standard Compliance as an independent entity to regulate quality in the healthcare sector. This effectively allowed the office to be autonomous in its decision making, as well as perform its independent functions of regulating quality in the healthcare sector. Just like all other entities, we are governed by the prescriptions in the Public Finance Management Act. Section 78 of the National Health Act details the objects which are the main functions of the Office of Health Standard Compliance, and that is to protect and promote the health and safety of the users of our health services. We do this by monitoring and enforcing compliance by health establishments with norms and standards that are prescribed by the Minister of Health in relation to the national health system. We also have a responsibility to ensure that we consider and investigate all complaints that are lodged with the Office of Health Standards Compliance relating to non-compliance with the prescribed norms and standards. And we seek to do this in a fair, economical, and expeditious manner. And this would be the program where the health ombud is located. Overall, the mandate of our office seeks to contribute to two distinct but interdependent regulatory outcomes within the healthcare sector. We would like to see reduction in avoidable mortality and morbidity, and we also want to reduce harm in health establishments by providing reliable and safe health services. We'd also like to see the overall improvement in the health sector, a healthcare sector and services that are available, responsive, and acceptable to all those that access them and to the general population. The OHSC derives its mandate from the Constitution, particularly Section 9, 12, and 27, and various other regulations and policies. Section 27 of the Bill of Rights establishes universal rights to have access to healthcare services to all the citizens. Section 28 of the Bill of Rights states that every child has the right to basic nutrition, shelter, and healthcare and social services. The National Development Plan, Priority 2, focuses on strengthening the healthcare system and does recognize the OHSC as an independent entity. One important bill is the National Health Insurance, which I will talk to in later slides. We also have procedural regulations, which then detail the functions and the operations of the Office of Health Standard Compliance. We also have the Presidential Health Summit Compact of July 2019, which also focused on the importance of the provision of quality healthcare services in all our health establishments. We're also guided by the various relevant court rulings pertaining to our function as the office. What our mandate implies is that as the OHSC, we act as the champion of the public and the users of the healthcare services. In doing so, we would like, through our work, to restore credibility and trust in the healthcare of the country. We respect the users, their families, as well as the healthcare personnel that provide these services. We aim to be effective in achieving the necessary change and the social impact within our healthcare services. In doing our work, we strive for excellence, for innovation, and efficiencies in our operations. When we do so, we wish to remain truthful, fair, and committed to intellectual honesty. In our work, we practice transparency but respect confidentiality, and indeed, we'll always aim to achieve the highest standards of ethical behavior, teamwork, and collaboration, as well as promote professionalism. So all of this would then be the overall impact of our mandate. There is an important link of the Office of Health Standards Compliance to the National Health Insurance. The NHI bill provides that health establishments and service providers that seek to contract with the NHI fund must be accredited. Now, this process of accreditation of these healthcare establishments as well as providers would require that all of them are inspected and certified as compliant with the prescribed norms and standards by the Office of Health Standards Compliance. Honorable members, what this effectively means is that the critical role for the OHSC in the NHI is that all of those health establishments would have as a first step, as the gateway to contracting with the NHI fund, first be inspected and certified as compliant with the norms and standards. It should be noted that our operations are then broader than actually even the NHI bill, in that we have this broader role of ascertaining and assisting the country that the quality of services, both in the public and private healthcare sector, are improved, and this remains fundamental to the work of the Office of Health Standard Compliance. In delivering our work, our vision is consistent, safe, and quality healthcare for all, and we do so through monitoring and enforcing healthcare safety and quality standards in all the establishments, And as a regulator, it's important that we remain independent, impartial, fair, and also fearless on behalf of the users of our healthcare services. Indeed, there are a number of values that we subscribe to, human dignity being one of them, that we respect human individuality, and in doing our work, we wish to treat each individual as a unique human being. Accountability is core to our operations. We take responsibility for the results and outcomes of the findings of all the work that we do within OHSC. We operate in a way that creates openness between managers and employees as we inspect the various health establishments. Quality health care means that it is our responsibility to contribute in the healthcare sector to ascertain that in the provision of services, service providers do the right thing the first time around and in the right way to avoid any morbidity and mortality, and in order to improve the possible results and overall the health outcomes of a country. We wish to maintain a safe, healthy workplace for all our employees. That is, of course, applicable to the governing laws. Integrity is fundamental to us. We wish to remain open and honest and respect all our stakeholders. Honorable members, I then come to the five programs within which we operate and implement all our services. We have five programs: administration, program 2, compliance inspectorate, program 3, complaints management and the office of the ombud, program 4, health standards design, analysis and support, program 5, certification and enforcement. All the output indicators that I'm going to explain and provide performance thereof for the financial year would then be encompassed within the five outcomes in order for us as the office to determine our success and have the positive impact which we aim for in the healthcare sector. We need to achieve these outcomes. The first being a fully functional Office of Health Standard Compliance. We want an outcome where there will be effective monitoring of the compliance with norms and standards. We definitely wish to see improvements in the quality of healthcare services that are rendered to the users, and also to facilitate the achievement of compliance with norms and standards and the regulations through providing guidance to the facilities. And overall, and outcome 5 will be the compliance with norms and standards increasing in the whole country, because we know that with that, will then be able to achieve better health outcomes for all. Looking at the performance for 2020-21 at a glance, we had 21 output indicators which we tracked and reported in our annual report. 14 of the 21, which is 67%, we either achieved or partially achieved. 7 or 33% of the output indicators were not achieved. And we managed to achieve an unqualified audit. Similarly to all other entities and the country at large, we were also negatively impacted by the COVID-19 operational environment. We were forced to make certain adaptations, which I will then go through as I present. I then come to the administration, which is program 1. And this is a program that provides leadership and administrative support to the OHSC in order to enable us to deliver on our mandate within the relevant legislative requirements. Sub-program 1 in administration, which is human resources, the output indicator of percentage of vacancies filled within 4 months of the vacancy existing, we had a target of 90% for 2020-21. we achieved 42%. We managed to fill 10 out of the 24 vacant positions within a period of 4 months. Recruitment during this period was negatively impacted by the national state of disaster. However, I need to mention to the honorable members that the type of work that the office does requires specialization in certain fields. It has been difficult to fill some of the positions simply because it's been difficult to recruit the requisite skills. However, I need to report that at the end of March 2021, we managed to fill 119, which is 94%, of the 127 funded posts. Still within the human resources sub-program, an indicator, the percentage of certified inspectors after completion of training. We are required as the office to provide a training program for all our inspectors. We do have a comprehensive training program in collaboration with one of the tertiary institutions. We managed to have 49 certified inspectors by the end of 2020-21. The training program was also affected by the COVID-19 environment, and it overlapped into the next financial year. The next sub-program, finance and supply chain management. As a public entity, it is important for us as the OHSC to demonstrate accountability and transparency in the financial management and program performance reporting, and also to build trust in the work of the OHSC by the general public. Guided by the OHSC board, we are pleased to report to the honorable members that the OHSC achieved an unqualified audit opinion with no material findings by the Auditor General of South Africa. This unqualified audit opinion marked the OHSC's sixth year in succession of this performance. The next sub-program, information and communication technology, it needs to be stated that in 2019, we moved to new office premises where we had to establish the IT or the information communication technology infrastructure from the beginning and from scratch. It is for that reason that we then monitored and tracked this output indicator. Now, the one that refers to core services would relate to all the apparatus in as far as IT is concerned, which we put in place to ascertain that we're able to conduct the inspections, we're able to monitor the annual returns from health establishments, as well as the early warning system. Our achievement was above the planned target at 99%. And this is because we were able to monitor closely the service providers and also implemented automation in some of the manual operations which we previously had. The next output indicator is almost the same as the one just presented, where we now report and track the availability of information communication and technology support to overall OHSC services. And once again, we were able to achieve 98% against a target of 95%. The other sub-program in administration, communication and stakeholder relations, it's important for us as the regulator to stay in touch with our stakeholders in communities. Our output indicator, the number of community stakeholder engagements that aim to raise public awareness on the role and powers of the OHSC and those of the health ombud, we had a target of 12. We only managed to achieve 6. And indeed, here we're also restricted by the legal restrictions and also prescribed around the number of people in gatherings. Towards the end of the year, when the restrictions eased, we managed to raise some public awareness in Aratau in the Northwest. We have since adapted our operations based on the current environment within which we operate in the country. We have, in this financial year, reached out to our communities through community radio stations, which tend to have a wider coverage, although the drawback being that we don't have the face-to-face contact with our communities. We have also adapted and now started to work through virtual platforms, and we also continue to collaborate with other regulators in our space in raising awareness of the work that we do. The next output indicator, we track the number of private sector engagements to raise awareness on the role, again, of the OHSE and the Health Ombud. With this indicator, and for us as the office, this output indicator is very important because we need to be seen to be visible within the private sector environment as well. We had a target of 8, and we were able to conduct webinars with the mining sector, the general medical practitioners, and the emergency medical services. We have increased in 2022, in this financial year, using various platforms to reach out to the private sector. The next program, Compliance Inspectorate, this is the largest program of the Office of Health Standard Compliance, where the norms and standards are monitored through conducting inspections in our health establishments. Now, the purpose is to inspect all health establishments in the country, both public and private. So our indicators were meant to track those inspections which we have conducted in the private sector as well as in the public sector. The first output indicator refers to the inspections we conducted in the public sector. In 2020-21, we had a target of 382 inspections to be conducted of a total of 3,816 health establishments. The 382 target was set in accordance with the available funds for 2020-21. We managed to achieve this target, and in addition to the 387 inspections that we conducted in the public sector, we also conducted inspections that we picked up through media reports, through our early warning system. And those were conducted in KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, Northwest, the Eastern Cape, and Limpopo. We also, in addition to this, conducted 23 COVID-19 rapid inspections, which I will go into detail later on. Prior to moving to the target on the inspections conducted in the private sector, I wish to highlight to the honorable members our trend over the years in as far as conducting inspections is concerned. The 2018-19 and 2019-20 financial years, members would note that our target, which we achieved at the end of these financial years, was higher at 730 and 647 respectively. In 2020-21 and 2021-22, our targets drastically went down to 387 and 299. This was as a result of the funds that we had available and the budget cuts that were experienced by everyone. Let me hasten to mention that in 2020-21, because of the COVID-19 situation, a number of our operations had to be adapted to other platforms. This resulted in us realizing a surplus in our budget, which we have requested to retain. It is for that reason that for 2020-22 and 2020-23, we have increased our target to 786. And this is as a result of some of the money that we will use, but also importantly, moving of funds to focus more on core activities now that we realize that some of the positive lessons learned during the COVID-19 situation was that some of the work can be done virtually. Now, in relation to the inspections that are conducted in the private sector. For 2020-21, we had a target of 16 of 393 private health institutions. Once again, this was based on the funds that we had available then. We did not achieve this target, and I will explain briefly what led to this. Now, in the beginning, or at the start of the office used the national core standards to develop inspection tools, which were used up until 2018. Now, these inspections in the formative years of the office were conducted mainly in the public healthcare sector environment. We started to interact more closely with the private sector with the promulgation of the regulations, which are now the norms and standards, in 2018. Now, the Minister of Health promulgated the norms and standards in 2018, and the entire year 2019, we then prepared the entire healthcare sector in as far as the developing of tools and also orientating the healthcare sector with the norms and standards. Now, we have had several interactions and numerous consultations with the private sector. What became apparent to us as the office was that the constitution of the healthcare service delivery model in the private sector is different from that in the public sector. So our role in the beginning was to understand their service delivery model, which we have now done, and be able to develop tools that would be specific and aligned with how they deliver the services. It is, however, important to stress that it does not necessarily mean that the private sector will have different norms and standards. We'll still use the same, but we had to adapt to the environment within which they deliver the services. We have since concluded these consultations, as well as developed the inspection tools for the private sector. In fact, we will start with the piloting of these tools at the end of quarter four. So we will be able to report on inspections conducted in the private sector in the next financial year, because we certainly do not want to give the impression that we only operate in the public sector. The next output indicator under Compliance Inspectorate Unit is the percentage of additional inspections that are conducted in health establishments. Now, the additional inspections effectively means that when we conduct inspections, when we first go to an institution, we would consider that as a routine inspection. We will then inspect. If we find that there are a number of breaches or there is non-compliance with the norms and standards through a set criteria that is defined in the re-inspection strategy, we then go back to conduct what we then term an additional or re-inspection. Now, when this is necessary, it then becomes important that all those health establishments that are identified or earmarked for re-inspections, we should conduct all of them, which is why we have a plan target of 100%. We started the inspections in 2020-2021 in the third quarter of the year. We could not conduct inspections in quarter one and in quarter two. Now, because the process of the processes that unfold once we go to a health establishment and conduct an inspection, it became difficult to conduct the re-inspect, the additional inspections, because they are informed by the initial inspection. So there was an overlap of the inspections into the next financial year. We have started with the re-inspections. However, they did not fall within the reporting period because of the late start of the inspections in quarter three and quarter four of 2020-21. Most importantly, we are required to publish biannually a consolidated report on the performance of health establishments against the norms and standards. We then have an indicator of two of these reports. We have managed to publish, complete one report. And the reason is that because these reports are biannually, and we had already lost quarter one and quarter two, the reports overlap into the next financial year. Moving to program three, which is complaints management and the health ombuds, the outcome is improved quality of healthcare services that are provided to all those that access services in all our health establishments. In this program, we do so by looking at the complaints, investigating them, assessing them, those that are related to non-compliance with prescribed norms and standards. And this is where, or the program where the health ombud is located. As much as we receive these complaints, it is important to always stress that our work does not seek to replace the local complaint resolution mechanism in health establishments. And even when we raise awareness and interact with our health establishments, we always encourage them that it is always best that complaints are dealt with at a local level. All of the indicators in program three will then track and monitor the time within which we're able to resolve or dispose of complaints that we receive. The first output indicator is the percentage of low risk complaints resolved within 25 working days that are lodged within the call center. We had a target of 65%. We were able to overachieve at 92%, which is 2,108 complaints resolved within 25 working days of the 2,296 received. I need to mention to honorable members that this program, where the health ombud resides, is one of the programs that was established much later within the Office of Health Standard Compliance in terms of the staff complement. To that end, it's one of the most severely short staff programs. With the work of the health ombud and the release of the report, we have seen an exponential increment in the number of complaints that we receive. And it has been difficult to meet and reach some of the targets, as you will see in the next slide. This indicator, the percentage of complaints that are resolved through assessment within 30 working days of receipt of response from complainant and or the health establishment. As we deal with these complaints and investigations, we are dependent and reliant on the interaction that we have with the complainant and the health establishment. Such interaction often means getting the relevant documentation, sourcing all the medical records. As much as we have put a target of 30 working days, it has been difficult to achieve this output indicator. One, because we are dependent on the time that it takes the health establishment or the complainant to respond to the issues that we raise as the office. It is for that reason that our performance was really not good for this indicator. However, beyond that, as I've indicated, this is where we have seen quite a huge increase in the complaints that we receive as opposed to the available human resource complement, which is available to deal and dispose of these complaints. The next three indicators will then look at those complaints which are now forwarded to investigation. Now, if these complaints are not resolved within 25 days or 30 days, and depending on the complexity of the complaint that is sent, others are then, they go for a full-fledged investigative process. The output indicator, the percentage of complaints resolved within 6 months through investigation, we had a planned target of 10% of those that are received. We managed to resolve one of these investigations of the nine that were received. One of the reasons was that we were not able to actually visit those health establishments, because with these investigations, there's a lot of interaction between the investigators as well as the health establishments. But also, other than the travel restrictions, as I've indicated, it's also dependent on the availability of the information that is required for the investigation. I will indicate later what the office did, even though we were not able to achieve some of these output indicators. The next two would be those complaints or investigations that are resolved within 12 months, and the next one within 8 months. For both of these, it will be noted that our achievement was zero. For 12 months, our target was 20%. For 18 months, again, our target was 20%. Now, although we have reported zero, it effectively means that these investigations were not resolved within the prescribed period of 12 months and 18 months. I need to, however, report to the honorable members that during 2020-21, the Office of Health Standard Compliance and the Health Ombud worked on a project to address the backlog of cases, as I've indicated that indeed we've seen a huge increase in the cases that the complaints that we received. So during this financial year 2020-21, we were able to close 170 backlog cases, and we were able to produce 15 preliminary reports, which was at the end of the financial year, which now have been finalized. I am stating this output because it is not indicated in the output indicator simply because they fall outside of the 12-month and 18-month reporting period. But this is work that was done, that the backlog of cases have been reduced. This, of course, necessitated a lot of hard work from the team, as I've indicated, that this is one program that is severely short-staffed. Program 4, health standard design, analysis, and support. This is the program where health standards are developed, where we look at all our data for more in-depth analysis so that we can determine the trends in the healthcare system, where we develop tools as well as training offered not only to inspectors, but also to the entire healthcare system. Section 79 of the Act, where the functions of the Office of Health Standard Compliance are stipulated, that gives the responsibility to the OHSC to make recommendations for improvement in the healthcare sector. For 2020-21, we had a target of 3, and we were able to develop all 3 reports. Now, these recommendations are critical because they go beyond the individual inspection reports that we provide to facilities. These reports will then analyze the information and inform the healthcare sector, whether national, provincial, or municipal health, on certain issues that may be common shortcomings in terms of compliance with norms and standards. The recommendations which we have shared with the various authorities related to issues pertaining to infection prevention and control, clinical management, waiting times, management of patient records, as well as reporting of adverse events in health establishments. Again, the National Health Act does require of us to provide guidance on norms and standards, as well as the inspection tools to facilitate implementation of these norms and standard regulations. Now, these guidance workshops are important for health authorities and stakeholders to better understand the standards, as well as to be able to interact with our inspection processes. We had a target of 24 of these, we were able to achieve 18. Some of the workshops which we had planned with the private sector groups, we acceded to their request for extensions in terms of providing input to the inspection tools. What we then realized is that once we share the inspection tool with the private sector, there's quite extensive consultation, which has indeed occurred within the various private healthcare sector group, in as far as providing us with input into the inspection tools, which we then had shared with them. And it is a process which we similarly follow in the public sector. I'm happy to report to the honorable members that we have finalized the private sector inspection tool, as I alluded to that earlier, and we will soon be starting or commencing with the inspections. The last program, Program 5, Certification and Enforcement. Here, it's a program where we would wish to see that there is overall compliance with the norms and standards, because it will translate into improved quality of healthcare and then overall into improved health outcomes. Now, in this program, we certify those health establishments that are found to be compliant with the norms and standards. And in instances where we perceive that there is persistent non-compliance with the norms and standards, the office has powers to take enforcement action. So our output indicator, the first one, relates to the certification of the health establishment. The percentage of health establishments issued with a certificate of compliance within 15 days of the date of the final inspection report. As I indicated that we started the inspections in quarter three, quarter four, so the certification of health establishments for 2020-21, some of it overlapped into the current financial year. However, we're able to issue 33 certificates of compliance. Our plan target will always be 100%, because once a facility is compliant, we should and always issue it with a compliance certificate. These would be the compliance certificates that would be issued to all those facilities that would wish to participate in the NHI fund. The next indicator is the percentage of health establishments against which enforcement action is initiated within 10 days of the date of the final inspection report. There are a number of input processes prior to enforcement action being taken by the Office of Health Standard Compliance. We have reported zero here with a plan target of 100%, because for all those health establishments where we have to take enforcement action, it should then follow so. Now, why we did not take enforcement action is that, as I've indicated, that we enforce compliance once we have conducted a re-inspection, meaning that we would have been into a health establishment, would have determined that there's non-compliance. We give them a compliance notice, which will then prescribe the time frame within which they need to correct the breaches in the norms and standards. When we then go back to conduct a re-inspection, depending on the issues and the factors that are at play, the office can then issue or invoke enforcement action. So we are in a process. We have actually started the re-inspections. So the enforcement action will only be reported in this current financial year for the reasons that I have previously alluded to. We also have to produce a compliance report every 6 months in relation to the certification as well as the enforcement that are taken by the Office of Health Standard Compliance. We have released one such report, and we have compiled the other one, which will also will contain some of the certification which relate to 2020-2021. Honorable members, that brings me to our response to the COVID-19 situation as the Office of Health Standard Compliance. In addition to the development and implementation of COVID-19 protocols within the Office of Health and Compliance, we had to adapt our operations. It would have been extremely difficult for us as a regulator to regulate for quality of services within an unfolding public health emergency. However, it was important for us to still ascertain that even given the COVID-19 pandemic, we still encourage the facilities to maintain the quality of services. It was a difficult period. The first thing that we did was to develop inspection tools that are focused on infection prevention and control. We did this so that we can be able to assist the facilities to respond to the COVID-19 emergency situation. Now, these inspection tools assisted the facilities to assess their state of readiness to manage the COVID-19 patients, and also to ensure that even during these difficult times, minimum standards are maintained to ensure the safety of the users and of staff. We then conducted what we termed the rapid inspections using these tools. We went to the field hospitals and assessed them across the country, 23 of those, and issued these reports to the health establishments in order for them to work on. We also responded to a number of COVID-19 related complaints which were received by the office. We received 29 of these complaints from the general public, and in the main, these complaints related to breaches in infection prevention and control by facilities, denying of services to patients that tested COVID positive, as well as postponement of elective surgeries by the various health establishments. We also reviewed, we also monitored all the other media reports that related to the COVID-19 and the delivery of healthcare services. And these are the early warning system inspections, which I referred to, which we conducted in addition to our routine inspections. Honorable members, it brings me to the challenges that are faced by the Office of Health Standard Compliance in 2020-21, and of course, some of them are still prevalent at this moment. The OHSC is a growing organization. We do not have adequate funding to fulfill our mandate in the sense that we have an approved and new organogram where we have certain positions that are critical to the operations of the office, and most of these positions are not funded. We have experienced financial constraints even though we did realize a surplus, and this does have a negative impact in the inspections that we conduct. For the full mandate and the full impact of the OHSC to be realized in our healthcare sector, expansion of inspections is critical. We need to have a national footprint and a provincial footprint. It is important for us to expand into the private sector and to fully expand in the public sector. The OHSC board approved the OHSC business case. This is a guiding document that provides us with a framework of how our operations should unfold and our priorities for the next 5 years in relation to the national health insurance, in relation to the expansion of inspections in the public and private sector. According to this document, we have an excess of 5,000 health establishments to inspect. While the Act allows us to inspect each health establishment at least once in 4 years, with the current staff and with the current service delivery model, which is mainly centralized in a central office, it is going to be extremely challenging to do so. As the office, we have discussed and we have developed a decentralized model, which will then allow the OHSC to have regional offices, which will make it easier and more faster to reach out to inspections in the provinces. However, that will require additional funding to set up those regional offices. I have alluded to the human resource constraints, not only in complaints and investigation management units. We do need additional inspectors so that we can be able to conduct or expand inspections. We also need to develop more health standards. We do require more resources to do so. Indeed, as I have indicated, that we tried to adapt to the COVID-19 situation so that we adapt our operations in 2020 to also contribute to the overall national response on our COVID-19 situation. In terms of way forward, the National Health Act does allow the Office of Health Standards Compliance to charge fees for some of the operations that we conduct, such as inspections and the providing of guidance and support. We are in interacting with the National Department of Health to see if this is not a possible revenue generation source for the Office of Health Standards Compliance. However, in the meantime, we'll still have to rely on the national fiscus as our main source of revenue. I have alluded to the increase in the inspection coverage and the importance of expanding into a decentralized model. One of our main priorities is conducting the inspections in the private sector so that we can be able to have a footprint in the entire healthcare system. Honorable members, that brings me to the end of the program performance information. I will then invite my colleague, Mr. Mapata, our Chief Financial Officer, to take us through the financial information.
Thank you, CEO, and good morning to the honorable members. I will take the members through the financial information for 2020-21 as audited by the Auditor General. On this slide, we can see that overall the revenue of the OHSC saw a 3% decline. One of the reasons is because as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, the National Treasury made adjustments to most of the budget allocations. So the OHSC was also affected by that adjustment. We did not receive the full allocation that was indicated as a result of the pandemic. In terms of expenditure, as we'll see in the next slide, there was a 14% decrease, and we will see the reasons thereof why there was a 14% decrease in the expenditure. Next slide, please. Next slide. Thank you. In terms of the outcomes, the OHSC achieved a clean audit as audited by the Auditor General. And in terms of revenue, there was only a 1% increase in the allocation from National Treasury, but originally it was more than the 1%. I've already indicated that this was as a result of the reduction in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. There was also a decrease in the interest that we realized on short-term investments because of the reduction in interest rates when the Reserve Bank reduced interest rates in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. And the reasons for a reduction in expenditure, there was a general moratorium on salary increases across the public service. So the OHSC was also affected. We also did not implement any salary increases during 2020-21. And there was also an impact on traveling, especially traveling for the inspectorate. For the first two quarters, it was not possible to travel as a result of the lockdown. So that impacted on the cost. And also we saw a slight increase in our asset base. But the main two reasons were the salary increase is not implemented and also reduced traveling as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Next slide, please. And I've already spoken to this, which are the main contributors to the surplus. We can skip this. So having realized the surplus in 2020-21, we approached the National Treasury earlier this year with the intention of seeking approval to retain the surplus that was not used during 2020-21. The National Treasurer agreed to allow us to retain it. And these are the reasons why we want to retain the surplus. One, we want to supplement the human resource capacity in complaints management. The CEO has already alluded to that, as well as the other relevant units. But this capacity will be supplemented on a short-term basis, a 12-month contract, because we cannot commit long-term using the surplus. And we also want to use the surplus to conduct additional inspections and re-inspections during the current financial year. So here we anticipate a situation where the target as set in the APP will be exceeded in respect of inspections because of this surplus. We also want to do a recapitalization of our assets. Most of our assets, laptops and computers, were procured in 2015-16. So they're already 5-6 years old. So we're doing a recapitalization of that. And we also want to develop and enhance some of our core systems in inspection, early warning system, certification, enforcement. So these are the issues we want to address with the surplus. And in terms of total expenditure, we can see from this slide that the inspectorate realized a 26% decline in expenditure when compared to 2019-20. This was because of the pandemic, wherein it was virtually difficult or impossible for inspectors to go out and conduct inspections during the first two quarters. We can go to the next slide. This also at the bottom, we just wanted to show a share of the expenditure that the core functions made up 53% of expenditure, with support functions making up 47%. Under support functions, the main and single most biggest element here is office space. Together with all the relevant costs related to office space. So this is the biggest expenditure under support services. Next slide, please. This slide is the same as contains the same information as I've presented now. We can skip this one. In terms of compensation costs, we can see that most of the expenditure relates to staff at professionally qualified and skilled technical. That makes up 65% of total expenditure. This is where the majority of the inspectors are located. So the rest of the 35% is distributed across the other three levels, but the core costs are situated in the two levels there, and they make up 65% of our total compensation costs. Next slide, please. And in terms of the staff complement, we can see that almost half the total staff complement is made up of inspectors. 45% was in the inspectorate. And in terms of focus areas, 73% of our staff are in the core functions. The core functions will be the inspectorate, standards development, complaints, management, certification, and enforcement, with support functions making up 27%. Support functions is HR, finance, IT, the CEO's office, and board communication, board secretariat. Next slide, please. This is the same information as I've presented. We can skip this one. I think this should be the last slide. That was the last slide. Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll pause there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO, Chairperson of the Board, CEO and CFO. Anything else you want to add now before I hand over to the members? Nothing. Honourable members, you have now received the presentation from the OHSC. I see there are six members who want to ask some questions to you or pose some questions to you, and it's going to be in the following order. First one is Honorable Maklengwa, number two, Honorable Gela, number three, Honorable Wilson, number four, Honorable Ismail, number five, Honorable Chirwa, and number six, Honorable Sukacha. Any other members who would want to pose any questions or seek any clarity? None at this point in time. Thank you. You can start, Max Dengwa. Thank you very much, and we'll follow that order, honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings, and greetings to the member of OHSC. First of all, let me acknowledge the presentation. It was so informative and comprehensive. Thank you very much. I have only two seeking clarity questions. Number one, in the presentation, we were informed that only 41.7% vacancies were filled. This figure is a 48.3% deviation from the entity's set target. We understand that the national state of disaster impacted negatively on the entities, on the entity's ability to fulfill this position. But considering the importance of this management position, what urgent steps have since been taken to address this situation? The last one, at the slide 28, the committee was informed that a total of 23 COVID-19 rapid inspections were conducted, covering all except Limpopo. What was then for not covering Limpopo? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the report from the presenters. Chairperson, firstly, we welcome the audit outcomes, although there are issues that Auditor General identified, especially in Program 3, under complaints management. And I heard that they've already started to deal with them. And we know that there was COVID-19, but we know Uti, we are operating under very difficult situation. Coming to the issues of programs that were not implemented or your target not implemented due to COVID-19, I think you have a plan in place to make sure that at least you implement those outstanding targeted plan. The question that I want to raise, Chairperson, it's on resource management. The first one, how much has been set aside for the implementation of the revised organogram? The second one, please explain the rationale for appointing the service provider to assist with the implementation of new organogram. Could not this have been done internally by the human resource department so that you save the cost? Because I think that one, as you have HR in the HOSC, they can also do that because they have the capacity of doing that. Lastly, Chairperson, it's the issue of if they can also explain the budgetary constraint with the fulfillment of the entity mandate. Those are my three questions that I wanted to raise. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Good morning to you, and forgive me if I come across as being very more of a shadow than a person at the moment. Unfortunately, I am forced to sit where I am due to network constraints. But I thank you to the OHSC for your presentation. I am from Limpopo, so anything relating to Limpopo is always going to be a major concern for me, because that is where I spend a lot of time doing oversights. And it raises a point with me, because one of the mandates of the OHSC is to ensure that there are reliable and safe health services. And unfortunately, in a place like Limpopo, and I have done many, many oversights there, very few of those, particularly in the rural areas, would I consider hospitals and clinics to be safe, and certainly don't supply rural, reliable health services. And a case in point is the Rural Senecal Clinic, which I visited a few weeks ago. Rural Senecal is plagued by cable theft. They go days and days, if not weeks, without electricity. The clinic is open, but there is no generator. For days and days and days, medicines in the fridges are still dispensed, and yet there's nothing to be holding them at their correct temperatures. And there was no water on the day that I arrived there. Apart from that, I also found an old caravan parked at the back of the facility that was filled with disgusting, bloody and filthy linen. So that is a concern for me. I recently gave testimony at the Human Rights Commission, which sat for a week with regards to water services in Limpopo and in particular at Rua Senecal. And it was very disturbing when representatives from the Department of Health appeared before that commission and told that commission under oath that all of the hospitals in the area had all the hospitals, medical services, clinics in the entire Limpopo had access to water and had running water. And this is absolutely not true whatsoever. I had just visited several where there was no water whatsoever. So I think, please, and I offer my services, I offer my assistance to the OHSC. These are areas that need to be looked into with extreme urgency. There is no way, and another one is the Philadelphia Hospital. They call it the hospital of death because you are more likely to die there than walk out well there. And I think that these situations need to be followed up, and I think they need to be dealt with as a matter of urgency. Yes, obviously, staffing is a major concern, and I understand that, and that there have been budget constraints. However, in terms of the bigger picture of the Department of Health, the OHSC plays one of the most critical and vital roles. And I really think we need to make an assessment of your budgets and what is required, because without your services, without your feedback to the portfolio committee as a whole, we are getting very inaccurate information as a result of inspections not being done when they should. And just finally on COVID, and COVID affected everybody, and you mentioned in your report that you were very, very constrained in during COVID and could not do what you had to do because of budget constraints. And I find this alarming. We received so many complaints about people in COVID hospitals, particularly, that were being forced into beds in garages, in tents, in areas that were unsafe, that were exposed to the weather. We were talking about seriously ill people. And I really think that the OHSC, that should have been a priority. And it's very sad to hear that you couldn't get all your inspections done, when in actual fact, that was the most critical period. probably not questions as such, Chair, but certainly statements with regards to the situation that I think need addressing. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for the presentation. I'm mostly covered by my colleagues. However, just for clarity and for emphasis, you know, in your opinion, what is needed to increase the compliance target from 10% to 50%? There's been lots of discussion, you know, of COVID restrictions and so forth. So what resources are needed for you to improve on delivering your mandate, especially under the times of COVID? We know COVID is not going anywhere. So what strategies are you putting in place to ensure that compliance does go on, even if COVID still persists in the next year or two? My second question, there is mention of charging fees for inspection. Now, just for clarity, these fees, who's going to be paying these fees going forward? And my third question, although you've touched on it, you have mentioned that, you know, all our facilities will be compliant if they're going to be contracted to the NHI. So what strategy are you putting in place to ensure that, you know, we actually reach these targets and to ensure that, you know, almost all our facilities are actually going to be compliant and, you know, being able to be contracted with NHI to ensure that we actually have service delivery on the ground? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the OHSC for the presentation. And apologies for I'm actually unwell, but we're fortunate enough it's actually online, an online or virtual meeting. I just have a few questions to the OHSC, really. Firstly, I want to know, you know, on what are the tangible enforcement methods for facilities that don't comply with the OHSC and the Health Ombudsman, but that will also be shared with him when he comes to the site. Like, how do you go beyond just sending recommendations and the threat of revoking certificates? How do you ensure that, you know, your enforcement methods become a reality in facilities that don't comply? And then secondly, especially in the past year, we've seen hospitals being flogged, we've seen an overburdensome and an entire collapse, really, especially in rural areas and in township areas. I would add informal settlements, but there aren't health facilities in informal settlements, which also should bring us to really think about the conversation around universal health care coverage. But apologies for digressing. I want to know on what has there been any certificates that have been revoked in the past year, noting the COVID pandemic, and which particular health facilities has the OHSC taken as priorities to ensure that they comply with the standards by the OHSC? And what is the update on those facilities? And if they aren't, please clarify why that isn't the case. You've noted that COVID has pretty much constrained you from doing your duties in the past year and a half, which I think has been also shared as a sentiment, but is quite really sad, because that's when we needed the most vigor from the OHSC. And as is the case across the board from all the entities, SAPRA came to the party, even though there's a bit of disagreements and stuff like that. And there were other entities as well who pretty much lifted up their socks in regards to us facing a global pandemic, and that the one of the most crucial duties or responsibilities of the OHSC could not be fulfilled during a global pandemic is something that calls for a worry. Over and above the budget constraints generally. Thirdly, I want to ask the OHSC on how they plan to implement the recommendations of the Auditor General SA. which recommendations these are and the time frame that you have put to those recommendations and how you will implement them. Please just appraise the committee on that particular thing. And fourthly, on the issue of ensuring reliable health services, understanding the meaning of reliable, I would hate to think that it's subjective, but it probably is in this particular conversation. When people can't access clinics on weekends and after 4 p.m., how does the OHSC read the reliability of those facilities and people accessing quality healthcare as per need? Like when someone falls sick on Sunday and is unable to go to a clinic, but the OHSC has granted that particular facility the license or has noted it as a reliable facility, who exactly do you read reliability on behalf of as the OHSC when we've got institutions or facilities that people can't access on weekends and after 4 p.m. In township areas and rural areas in the Eastern Cape? I'll give an example in the Eastern Cape where I was for over a year, in Misrand in Kogama, right? In Misrand, there's a tiny clinic that is renting by the garage. And sometimes it's open and sometimes it's not. But such clinics have licenses with the OHSC and are seen to be compliant with the OHSC. And then there's another one in Storms River, which is also very much unreliable, opens when the need is according to the staff and according to whatever standard is being set that is outside the needs of the people in the community, and closes at 4 p.m., is closed on weekends. How do you then read reliability in such a circumstance where people in township and rural areas can't access health facilities and the hospital is more than 20 kilometers away from that healthcare facility? I just want to hear the position of the OHSC on that particular thing, on why reliability is not being read on that particular standard as well, that on weekends people can't access these health facilities that you give licenses to as the OHSC. And lastly, I want to ask about field hospitals. It has been a great concern, really, because your reach wasn't very much tangible in field hospitals in the past year and a half. There's been many complaints, there's been many grievances, people passing away, families saying they were neglected or that their facility was not capacitated enough. I want to know what the OHSC has had any kind of reach in regards to investigating or analyzing or getting into field hospitals in the past year and a half as we were fighting the COVID pandemic. Just appraise us on what your footprint has been in regards to the health, in regards to field hospitals, like the one in Khayelitsha and the one in Johannesburg. Has there been any work that has been done by the OHSC in regards to field hospitals in particular? And if there is, what kind of work was there and what kind of findings did you guys get? And if possible, please also share it in writing after your oral answer. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chairperson, let me first greet all honorable members and let me also welcome the report from the OHSC. Just 3 points of clarity, Chair, from my side. I hope I'm not going to repeat what other members have said, but at some stage the questions will definitely overlap. My first question, Chair, is on the non-financials. When the presenter was presenting, she mentioned that service providers will have to contract services from the National Health Insurance, the NHI, and their responsibility as the OHSS is to see that these service providers are complying. I'm just checking, Chair, if a service provider is not complying, is there any remedial action or OHSC working a distance with them where they explain and then a fourth process explain where they need to rectify and so on? Or are they just saying and cut them and say, you're not complying, therefore go back? Then the second one on the non-financial share, I think it's under program three, the complaints directorate, where the presenter indicated that they've got a lot of complaints there because of a severe shortage of staff. And I just want to check on that, link it to the financials when the presenter was presenting, the presenter talked about reserves that they are having in terms of funds, and one of the reserves is around them not being able to appoint or fill some of those vacant posts. And he also indicated that they've talked to Treasury, and Treasury have given them a go-ahead to roll over or to retain the funds. Now, and he also mentioned that concerns me, said they will only be able to, if my memory serves well, that they will only be able to fill those posts for 1 year. That is my concern, 1 year. What happens after that 1 year? Because they indicated that they've got a severe shortage of staff, and then that program is their major program, where they've got a lot of backlogs. Now, if they only fill the posts for, because you said the reserves, there's a number of issues why they ask rollovers from Treasury. One of them is to fill those posts, but only for 12 months. That is my concern, Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We have one other member who wants to ask or raise a question, honorable Sigwela. Are there any other members before I'm going to close this round? Anyone else? Honorable Sigwela, you're next.
Okay. Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. And let me also welcome the presentation. Joining from what Honorable Kata just said, the question of the budgetary constraints is probably going to be with us for a very long time. And in the same breath, I do understand that there were savings that where it will enable them to hire some staff. My concern, which is similar to Honorable Sokaj, is what happens after 12 months? Because if the budget situation do not improve, and which is highly likely, what is the entity going to do to ensure that amid the problem, they are able to meet their mandate? The second point that I want to raise, Chair, is that the Act do allow them to visit or inspect a facility at least once every 4 years. What then I would like to know is what happens in between, after the inspection, when issues of non-compliance start to creep in? Do the entity rely on complaints by the public? And if not, do they have some random once-off in between the 4 years inspection to make sure that the entity or the health facility remains compliant through and through? Thank you, Chair.
Are you done, Honorable Sewela?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other member, finally? If not, thank you very much, honorable members. You've asked and raised some very important and crucial points. And I'm certain that the OHSC would be able to answer all of those questions of yours and concerns. Let me then also welcome the presentation and also congratulate the OHSC on having received a qualified and unqualified audit opinion. And then also to welcome the rapid inspections which they were able to perform at those 23 newly established field hospitals. It is commended that they were able to go and actually see that these are prepared correctly according to the norms and standards in order to be able to deliver services to our people. So well done on that. And then in terms of your different programs, we see under achievement of a number of targets. You have now explained some of those under achievements, and all of those explanations seem very acceptable to us. But the question would be, what could you have done differently, or what will you do differently in the future for you to be able to achieve all of your targets? And of course, it's very important that you should. And then in terms of your human resources challenge, it is a big challenge because really largely about what you do is about sending people to go and do inspections, to come back and do reportings and reporting to the management, and for the management to be able to engage on either the norms or standards or by the mandate given to you or by and a request by the department, and then, of course, request by the public, etc. So it all has to do with human resources. And so it is a concern, especially if you raise that you do not have enough funds. But also what is noted is that you've had a 50% staff attrition, that most of your positions as you are not funded, as you said, but also that you're having a difficulty in attracting people with necessary skills. And that lastly, you've had resignations of your former acting CEO and your executive manager. So is it a challenge that is particular to the OHSC? Or what would be the reason for us not being able to find suitably qualified people for the different positions? And then on your decentralization that you have proposed, is have you developed a plan for this yet? And have you developed a cost-benefit analysis for this? And do you think that you should be exploring looking at different venues, for example, at district municipalities instead of the costly venues that we normally use, and also bring that in relation to your to your road shows? And we know that road shows are quite expensive. So in other words, generally what I'm asking is, what are you looking at in the future in order to be able to change three things? Your financial position. Now we know about you are looking at charging costs. But more than that, what you're looking at changing that financial position. Secondly, what you're looking at to improve on your human resources plan and your organogram. And thirdly, what are you going to do to improve on your targets? And fourthly, what are your plans in terms of cost saving and your decentralization model? Thank you very much. I don't think there are any other members who are going to ask any questions. I'll hand straight back to you, Chairperson of the Board, Dr. Kanoshi, and then to your CEO and the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and also all the questions and the statements that posed by the Honorable Members. I'm going to start off with providing responses to the questions asked. I will be assisted by my colleagues, whom I will call as I go through some of the responses. The question by Honorable Shengwa around the filling of vacancies, which was at 41, or shall I say 42% at the end of financial year.
This output indicator tracks the time period within which we then fill a position, which should be within 4 months. And this is really to track our efficiency in terms of, you know, filling these vacancies. We said and we reported that by the end of the financial year, 10 out of 24 of these positions were filled. However, by the end of, at the beginning of the new financial year, which was March of 2020-21, we were standing at 119 positions filled out of a total of 127 posts funded, which gave us 94%. So what we did was to use other methods, such as headhunting. Yes, it is true that it's not easy to get some of these positions with the requisite skills. We do have a technical partner, the Better Health Care Program, that we also send feelers to them in terms of assisting us to get some of the technical support where we were lacking. But also, we are now considering, in fact, we have started the discussions of having some of these highly technical positions seconded by entities like the World Health Organization for a limited period of time. I need to indicate to members that at the beginning of the financial year, this one, 2021, we only had 8 vacancies. But yes, it is true that we could not fill those within the prescribed 4 months. With regards to Limpopo, we indicated that we did not conduct the rapid inspections. When we developed the tool for rapid inspections, we then focused in all the field hospitals which were in the country. At that time, Limpopo did not have a field hospital, which is why we went to the other provinces. Questions by Honorable Gela. I will be assisted by the Human Resource Unit, Mr. Mapata and Mohulula. Now, I need to indicate that as much as we do have the service provider that is going to assist us, it's only for those areas and aspects of the organogram which we do not have the technical skills to fulfill, like the various remuneration models. I need to give assurance to the honorable members that it is still within our full ownership of the OHSC to implement the organogram, because indeed it is not a function that we will outsource. The challenge that we're experiencing is that with the revised organogram, some of the critical positions are not funded. Yes, we did indicate that we will utilize some of the surplus money, but with regards to posts, we would have to ascertain that we're able to sustain those positions. But because we cannot guarantee that we would have the same money the subsequent years, because this was a surplus, it is for that reason that we have then said we can only contract for 12 months. Honorable Wilson, we accept some of the challenges that you have shared with us with regards to clinics in Limpopo and Philadelphia Hospital. I would like to request, and I think my colleagues and I have noted some of these hospitals and clinics, and we will certainly make a follow-up after this meeting to determine whether we have been or we have conducted inspections in those facilities and whether we have interacted with them. Now, I need to clarify that, yes, we mentioned COVID-19, but that does not imply that as the office, we did not undertake our operations as per our mandate. It says that during the hardcore lockdown in quarter one of quarter two, it was very difficult to travel because of the travel restrictions. But during that time, we then utilized our time to develop these inspection tools,
we then went to the field hospitals. We constantly engaged with the facilities, and we were closely monitoring all the media reports with regards to facilities where there were challenges, and we did indeed interact and visit some of those facilities. Honorable Ismail wanted to know from us whether we will be able to reach the compliance target, from at least move them from 10% to 50%, and the strategies that we have in place in order to expand inspections, and also those facilities to be compliant with the National Health or be able to contact with the National Health Insurance. I wish to indicate that our role as the regulator indeed is to get as many health establishments, both public and private, to be compliant with the norms and standards. There is then a very thin line between the work that we do as a quality regulator as opposed to the day-to-day activities that should happen at service delivery level. What we then intend to do is to ascertain that the inspection findings of the Office of Health Standard Compliance are actually acted upon, and the remedies in those breaches are acted upon. Now, that largely would lie within the district, sub-district, province, and national level. Now, it would be difficult, honorable members, to go and inspect and go back to the same facility and assist them to be able to comply with the norms and standards, because that would then conflate our role as a quality assurer as opposed to quality improvement. But where we agree with the honorable members is that is the importance of ascertaining that we communicate these findings, we communicate some of the commonalities, and we constantly engage with the facilities. And to that end, when we issue our final inspection report, we also attach what we term quality improvement plans, where we have then extracted all the breaches in the norms and standards. We then provide to the health establishment as well as the district so that they can start working on them. Then our role would then be to receive these improvement plans and see whether there is compliance. But in as far as the actual work being done, it's one of the areas and the interactions that we need to strengthen with the various stakeholders as the Office of Health Health Standard Compliance. Now, in terms of reaching the compliance targets, it is true that for the reporting period 2020-21, our target was low because of at that point in time, they allocated a budgetary fund to us. But we have since learned lessons during the COVID-19 pandemic. It's for that reason that we have increased our inspection target to 700 or so for this financial year. Now, as much as we would like to cover each and every facility, I have to mention that we have a complement of 61 inspectors in the Office of Health Standard Compliance. We have overall in excess of 5,000 public and private health establishments. Now, with the number 61, it is going to be, or it will be a challenge to reach out to all of them, even if we are required to inspect only once in 4 years, which then brings me to one of the questions asked by an honorable member. I think it's Honorable Suela, in that we go to a health establishment once in 4 years. But, and let us suppose we find that health establishment to be compliant, we issue a certificate of compliance. In the event there is non-compliance, either reported in the media or through a public complaint, which will then trigger a re-inspection, we have the powers to revoke that compliance certificate. In the interim,
We rely in the other leg of quality improvement that it should be sustained. Indeed, we would like to reach a stage where the health establishments that are compliant and issued with certificates of compliance, they remain so. But in as far as us being there to ascertain that, it would be through the issuing of the quality improvement plans, but also the interaction and the close understanding of the provincial departments of health and national as well as local level in terms of what needs to be done in the entire healthcare system to improve quality and with respect to our role as a quality regulator. Honorable Chira, the questions that were posed around certification and enforcement, I will be assisted by Advocate Makopa Madisha. I, however, would like to indicate that that how do we plan to work on some of the recommendations that were made by ATSA. Mr. Mapato will also assist me with that. However, in the programs that were audited, as much as there were issues that were raised, we have already developed improvement plans, particularly around complaint management and how we actually dispose with some of the complaints. And we have developed a project plan to deal with some of the backlog cases. Now, access to clinics within prescribed periods, we would wish that if there are clinics that we issued certificates of compliance and there are gross matters that relate to breaches in the norms and standards, we would appreciate or rather like to know which those are so that we can be able to relook at those. Now, the access from where we are as the regulator, until such time that a particular matter comes to the attention of the office, if it is that it's a clinic that needs to open up until a certain time, it is true that it should then be followed. But that function also lies within the local health district. So it would definitely be an interaction between us as the regulator, as well as the local health authority. Because when we talk about reliability, indeed, you are correct, Honorable Chiron, saying we need to have services that are reliable. But in as far as the opening times and closing times, we as the office may not be in a position to determine that, but we would have to interact with the local authorities to find out exactly what are the issues that would lead to the members of the general public not be able to reach those health services at the time that they are supposed to reach them. You have also requested that we should share in writing our report on the field hospitals. We will certainly duly do so after this meeting. I need, however, to indicate that we did inspect the field hospitals, the 23 which were in the country during that time, and we issued those reports which assisted those facilities to assess their state of readiness. We were able to also respond to all the early warning sign triggers which we received, either being through the media or through members of the general public that reported some of the issues to us. However, we will, as I have said, share the written report as requested. Now, all the other matters that relate to the enforcement action and the certification of facilities, I will request Advocate Makopa Madisha to assist in providing responses. Honorable Sokacha, in the event a health establishment is non-compliant, it would mean that we issue what we call a compliance notice. A compliance notice should also be seen and recognized as a tool to assist that health establishment to comply with the norms and standards. because a compliance notice will detail all the breaches in the norms and standards. Not only will it stop there, it will assign a definite time frame within which that health establishment is supposed to have remedied those breaches and reported back to the Office of Health Standard Compliance. I will also request Dr. Jacobs and Mr. Mapata to deal with some of the questions asked by Honorable Sokacha around the complaints management, the shortage of staff, and also the linkage with the financials as presented by the CFO. Honorable Jacobs, the chair raised pertinent issues that what is it we would do differently as the Office of Health Standards Compliance to achieve targets. Together with the board, it is an issue that was discussed and translated and distilled into an OHSC business case. Now, this OHSC business case, yes, it is costed. However, what we started off with is to identify those activities that were able to implement without actually additional funding. And that is the establishment of units like the monitoring and evaluation, which the office previously did not have. But noting that we are really a data-driven organization, we have started within that, and that would mean reconfiguration of what exists internally. I need to report to the honorable members that indeed that we did there was the resignation of the acting CEO, who was the executive manager of Compliance Inspectorate. We have since filled that position. We do have an executive manager, Ms. Tsukudu, in Compliance Inspectorate. We also, over the years, did not have an executive manager in complaints management. We have since appointed Dr. Jacobs. We also have a director in monitoring and evaluation, which did not exist since the start of the office. We do have Mr. Govuzela. However, some of the positions, for an example, when we implement the decentralization model, we would need to have the establishment of offices in the provinces, which would require more staff. As I've said, that we only have 61, and we're looking at the 61 inspectors against 5,000 or so health establishments. And here, I'm arbitrarily including the private sector as well. We also note what you have mentioned with regards to rather utilizing the district municipality offices or maybe requesting accommodation there, which will save us cost. We have explored that option. We'll continue to do so. But one of the main and major challenges that we have experienced and a criticism of the Office of Health Standards Compliance from our various stakeholders is that we are seen, or at times we are perceived not to be fully independent when and maybe more aligned with the public sector or the National Department of Health. It's important for us that as an independent regulator, we always maintain that independence. It does not necessarily mean that being in a district office will then compromise our independence. But what we need to look into is that we may not only be in district offices, but we'll also have to reach out to the private sector so that we also, where feasible, utilize some of their premises so that we're not only seen which is something that has previously been raised. However, we do acknowledge and accept that suggestion was put forward. At this point, I would like to then, in this order, call my colleagues to provide and add where I have left out Mr. Mapata, the HR and the finance questions, Advocate Makopa Madisha, the certification and enforcement questions and comments, Dr. Jacobs, the complaints management questions, and Mr. Mapata will also deal with some of the budgetary questions that were raised. Thank you very much, and over to you, colleagues, in that order.
Thank you, CEO and honorable members. I will be responding to the questions on finance and also the HR. There was a question by Honorable Geller with regard to the AGSA issues, and the same question was also raised by Honorable Siwela, Honorable Chiro, sorry, on the AGSA issues. So what we do is that once the AGSA has raised issues, we develop a plan in terms of how we want to address them. And we report progress to the board on a quarterly basis. So the board provides that oversight and monitoring to ensure that these issues are addressed. And as we speak now, as at the end of October, we were sitting at 80%, which means 80% of the issues that had been identified by the AG had been addressed. We were left with only two items, so which we think by the time the AG comes back to audit us next year, those issues would have been addressed. So that's how we deal with the findings, a plan that is reported to the board on a quarterly basis. And there was a question on resource management, I think it was Honorable Geller, in terms of the estimated cost for the revised organogram. So far, our preliminary estimates indicate around 210 million. For the current financial year, our remuneration budget is around 112 million. So, which means that the staff complement that we require is almost double what we have currently, which would be around 323. So that is the estimated cost. And on the question of the service provider for the organogram, the CEO has already touched on this, that there are aspects of the organogram where we did not have the requisite competence. One of them, for example, is there will be a migration from the current job grading system to a new one. We required the services of a service provider to assist us with regard to that, and the job profiling and evaluation of that. But most of the critical aspects there still reside with the OHSC. There was a question by Honorable Ismail on the charging of fees for inspection, saying who's going to pay. So in terms of the founding legislation, the OHSC can charge fees for services rendered. In this respect, we have identified two areas. One is the inspections. The second one is provision of guidance and support. So we anticipate that the facilities that we pay is both the private and public health facilities. We did take legal opinion in terms of whether the fees can be differentiated depending on the sector. And that opinion advised us that once the fees are gazetted, they are applied uniformly and consistently to all the sectors, irrespective of whether they are in the public or private sector. So, but we are also looking at making sure that the fees are not burdensome on especially the public health facilities, because we all draw from the same pot. They're all funded by National Treasury or the National Fiscus. We're also funded from the National Fiscus. So that is the balance that we are going to be looking at. So discussions have started with the NDOH on this aspect. There was also the question from Honorable Sokacha with regard to what happens beyond 1 year once we have filled the post on a 12-month basis using the surplus. And I think the CEO also touched on this. So in the past, what we did was we would recruit this staff on a 12-month contract basis. And during the course of the year, if we realize any savings, we still extend those contracts maybe for another 6 or 12 months. But we are just cautious that we don't take a long-term decision in terms of making them permanent based on a surplus that is not permanent. So this is the situation that we assess on a year-by-year basis. But the long-term solution would be just proper funding for all of these posts, which at this stage we do not have, hence we rely on the surplus that we charge. I think the same question was raised by Honorable Siwela also raised the same question in terms of what happens after 12 months. I think I've responded to that. And the chair, Honorable Dr. Jacobs, raised a number of issues. I think the CEO touched on them. One of the issues in terms of cost savings we're looking at, which we implement, is the issue of reprioritization internally. For example, with the emergence of virtual meetings and related aspects, we try to now redirect a few more resources into inspections. Because with the inspectors, they have to go on site, physically on site. So we're trying to reprioritize some of our operating models so that maybe where we realize savings, we can redirect them to assist in the savings. So we also think that the issue of charging of fees, although it will not be a major source of income, we think that it can contribute to improving some of the targets that we set for ourselves on an annual basis. So this issue of charging of fees, as I indicated, is something that we're busy discussing with the NDOH. But once it is approved, we believe that it will contribute towards increasing some of the targets that we have. I think I'll pause the CEO and allow my other colleagues. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, members of the Executive Board, the CEO and colleagues. I will be responding to questions raised by Honorable Member Chiro relating to certification and enforcement. Starting with the one on certification, whether there have been any certificates revoked in the previous financial year. The answer to the question is no. And members will note from the presentation that we have reported that 33 certificates of compliance were issued in the 2020-2021 financial year. But just to indicate the specific time frames, to say they were issued between October 2020 and March 2021. So following the issue of this certificate, no incidents or breaches were reported from the certified facilities. And maybe just to also add and share with members in terms of the process for revocation of a certificate of compliance is that when a health establishment is certified, and then as the OHSC, we identify serious breaches or an incident is reported, we then have to go and conduct a fact-finding inspection or verify the correctness of the incident that would have been reported or maybe the breach that is reported. And then that process will then be followed by a report, an inspection report with a compliance notice. And then after the compliance notice is issued, and then the breaches are not remedied or the non-compliance still stands, we will then follow by revoking the certificate of compliance. And this revocation in terms of the Act doesn't go alone. It's revoking the certificate of compliance and recommending a closure of that specific part of the health establishment that will be posing risk to the healthcare users, or if it is the whole health establishment, then we will then be recommending that the whole facility be closed. So we have not yet underwent this process because there were no breaches identified in all those certified facilities. And then in relation to the enforcement, Honorable Chira wanted to understand the enforcement methods that we use as the OHSC, or how do we ensure that enforcement is materialized. Just to also indicate that this is one of the processes that we will be starting to implement from now going forward. as reported in the previous financial year, there was no enforcement actions taken, mainly because this is the first report that we're reporting on the regulated norms and standards, and enforcement follows after a health establishment has been inspected and issued with a notice and have failed to comply with the conditions set in the compliance notice. So we are now conducting additional inspections to determine if the previous the previously inspected health establishments are still non-compliant and whether we can enforce compliance. And to also indicate that when you look at how the legislation is structured in relation to enforcement, our process is progressive in nature. That's why you have to inspect, give a notice, a compliance notice for a health establishment to remedy, and then if they fail to remedy the breaches, that's when you start taking enforcement actions. So one can simply say enforcement starts where a compliance notice is issued, because the compliance notice will then dictate the norms and standards that have not been complied with, the steps to be taken to achieve that level of compliance, as well as the period over which that compliance should be achieved, or the norms and the breach norms and standards should be remedied. And then we also have to indicate in the notice the penalties that may be imposed in case a health establishment is persistently non-compliant. So that is the first step that happens in order to ensure that health establishments comply with the norms and standards. And then there are other enforcement actions that are prescribed by law, which the OHSC can take, one of which being a warning for a health establishment to achieve compliance within a specific time frame. And I think what is also important to indicate is that in terms of the regulations that governs the functioning of the OHSC, the relevant authorities or our provincial heads and heads of hospitals with private hospital groups are required to appoint or designate someone that is called a person in charge for each and every health establishment. So this person in charge is the person that the OHSC will liaise with in relation to matters relating to infections and compliance with norms and standards. So if anything goes wrong in the health establishment, we as the OHSC have to now communicate with the person in charge. And when we issue a compliance notice, it is the responsibility of the person in charge to make sure that all those non-compliances raised in the notice are addressed. Therefore, when we issue a warning, we give it to the person in charge and give them time frames to ensure that they address the non-compliances achieved, the non-compliances identified. And then if we can also request for a written response, and this will also be addressed to the person in charge, so that they respond in writing for the persistent non-compliance, explaining what is it that is leading to the persistence in non-compliance, because at times you may find that it could be matters outside the control of the health establishment, but they still have a responsibility to then escalate it to the relevant authority for action or intervention. And we can also recommend to the relevant authorities, which are our provincial health, appropriate action to be taken for the persistent non-compliance in a health establishment. And that includes disciplinary processes against maybe any official, or if it's the person in charge, the person in charge, for their contribution towards the continued non-compliance in a health establishment. And then we can revoke and recommend to the minister a temporary or permanent closure of a health establishment if we as a OHSC are of the view that following our inspection and the findings, the health establishment is a risk and can cause harm to the users and employees of that facility. We can also impose fines and or refer the matters to the National Prosecuting Authority. And these matters include those that have got criminal elements in nature, or if one commits an offense in terms of the act. One of those offenses, just to mention, is that if a health establishment fails to comply with a compliance notice issued by the health by the OHSC, then we can, as stipulated in the act, refer such a matter to the NPA. So those are the enforcement actions or enforcement powers that we have as the OHSC in terms of the law, and we will be implementing going forward. We do not as yet have a case or a health establishment that has received any of this or upon which we have imposed any of these enforcement actions, but going forward we will be doing so. We have issued compliance notices, and we do see responses from health establishments, and we are monitoring those implementation of the recommendations as well as the steps that are listed in the notices. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are we through, CEO?
There's two more colleagues, Honorable Chair, Dr. Jacobs and Dr. Nkukudosile.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee, esteemed members of the OHSC Board and colleagues from OHSC. I'm addressing the issue that was raised by Honorable Sukacha in terms of the shortage of staff under Program 3. I think we share your concern, Honorable Member, about the short-term staff that are hired and the retention of skills and knowledge. In order to address this, as CFO has mentioned previously, we do use the funding surplus approved by Treasury to hire short-term contracted staff. And what we are actually in the process of doing is ensuring there is skills transfer and capacity building of these staff, as well as those permanent staff within the unit. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members. My name is Dr. Nkukudosile Zianda. I'm the Director for the Compliance Inspectorate. I'd like to respond to Honorable Member Wilson about the clinics in Limpopo, particularly the Rusenkau Clinic, as well as the Philadelphia Clinic. Honorable Member, we can confirm your findings. When we did inspections, particularly in the Rusenkau Clinic, just to say both of those health establishments were found to be non-compliant. However, within the OHSC, even when a health establishment is non-compliant, there is a grading attached to that non-compliance. So the Rusenkau Clinic was actually found to be an unsatisfactory health establishment, which then means that there is a large volume of measures that were found to be non-compliant. Now, as this office, we follow our regulations as stipulated by Advocate Makopa Madisha. Therefore, when we have given preliminary reports to the clinic, and we have given them an opportunity to address some of those measures that were found to be non-compliant. And because we break down these measures to see where exactly are the actual issues. Is it got to do with clinical managers of the hospital? Is it got to do with the infrastructure? Is it got to do with availability of water? Is it got to do with, you know, the supply of electricity, etc.? We then realize that particularly with unsatisfactory health establishments, there are measures that are outside the control of the health establishment. So it's easy for the health establishment to fix what is within their control, but what keeps them in a state of what we can call persistent non-compliance is usually due to measures that are outside their control that need, you know, intersectoral collaboration with regards to availability of water and other, you know, infrastructure issues that need, you know, collaboration between different departments. But we, as Advocate Makhuba Madisha has said, even after the release of the final report, we then give a compliance notice with stipulated timeframes. And should those, breaches not be addressed, then the enforcement route is taken. So with regards to this clinic, we are still undergoing that process where the compliance notice has been released, and that is at the point where we are with regards to that clinic. So similarly with Philadelphia, it was around the same time when they were inspected, but the findings of that particular clinic were slightly better. So it was non-compliant, but it was a satisfactory health establishment. So what we then do with that clinic, we then conduct re-inspections much earlier than we would compared to the unsatisfactory health establishment. So you can be rest assured, honorable member, that we are monitoring these health establishments, and we are in constant, checking that actually some of these breaches are being addressed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Eva. Is that it, CEO?
It is, honorable chair. We have covered all questions.
Yes, let me thank you and your chair and your CFO, your chairperson of the board, for all of the responses. I do not think that there will be follow-up questions. And yes, we have we've had a very comprehensive presentation. We've also had very comprehensive responses, which we are thankful for. I think any last words from you, CEO or chairperson of the board? Chairperson of the board?
Honorable chair, I've just received a communication that the chair was struggling with sound. I'm trying to establish whether he is still in the meeting. If he is not...
CEO might just do that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members. I think on behalf of the OHSC, we are grateful that we're given this opportunity to share the 2020-21 annual report. We have noted all the comments and the statements as well as suggestions and concerns that were shared by the Honorable Members. Indeed, we will continue to work on the issues that were raised. We thank you for this opportunity, and I also wish to thank the OHSC board members and all the colleagues. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, we will be receiving the presentation from the Health Ombud at 12:30. Please do not switch off your devices. We will just wait until about 25 minutes past 12. Come back to your devices. Enjoy the break. We'll see you later then. Thank you.
afternoon, Chair.
Hello, Chair.
Hey, hello.
Yes, Chair.
Nice break. I see Professor Makoba. Thank you very much for welcome, for honoring us with your presence. You are very welcome.
Thank you.
Hope your other presentations went well today. We have already had a presentation from the OHSC, and we only need this presentation from you.
Okay.
You are very welcome. And do you have any other members with you today?
Yes, I've got your namesake, Dr. Donna Jacobs. I don't know whether you are related or not.
No, but yes, continue.
And then I've got Mr. Monata Uthole, who is head of the complaints assessment, and he will have two slides to present. And then I've got Ms. Petwana, who is in charge of investigations, and she will also just have two slides. We have only about six slides to present, and then subject ourselves to questioning and clarifications and so forth. Yeah.
Yes, you're very welcome, Professor. Thank you very much, and also for bringing your team along with you. You can continue straight on with your presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Dr. Kenneth Jacobs and the honorable members of the committee for the opportunity, I think, to present our annual report. As you will have seen from my introduction in the report, I did not want to repeat, I think, what was contained about my portfolio within the OHSC, because I thought that was really one aspect of what I do, and it also talks to the sort of organization that we have between the OHSC and the Office of the Health Ombud. However, I just want to point out to honorable members that you will see that our logo has got three items at the beginning, two similar identical ones on both sides of the logo of the OHO. This logo represents that we belong to the International Institute of Ombuds in the world. And they've requested that we put our logos. So we are members of that, and they've requested that. And what we have done was to actually record those logos in isiZulu and in Pedi. So they are written in Pedi, just to complement, I think, the official logo of the Office of the Health Ombud, which is written in English, Pedi, and Zulu. So that's the first thing I wanted to share, that I think members of the committee might not have noticed that we are members of this august body. And as I say, we've decided to imprint our languages into the logo, and we requested that and we were granted permission. The reason I wanted to style my presentation in the way I've done it is that in our country, we have a lot of ombuds offices, and we have a lot of what you may call public protector offices, and they all conduct investigations, they make findings, and then after that, we don't hear what happens to the investigations and the consequences of the investigation. When I took this position in 2016, I made it clear there to the then minister that I don't want to become a talk shop where I just make investigations and there are no consequences, or I don't see the consequences. So after doing the first two investigations that are illustrated here, I enlisted an independent person through a program that funded me to really look at the impact of what we had done on the national health system and also on the professionals that are practicing within the system, because there is no system of national health without the professionals and without the establishment. So we undertook this after the Lifesi Dimeni. Now, as you know, the Lifesi Dimeni report was released in 2017 on the 1st of February. It received such wide publications in places like Venezuela, India, China. It was published all over. but it also became a resource for academic articles that appeared in peer-reviewed journals. It also has become a source of postgraduate studies. I know of a student who's just finished her master's at WITS with regards to this. So it has become a resource of enhancing, I think, the practice of medicine and the way I think doctors should look after patients. At the moment, as you are aware, it has become the subject of an inquest, a national inquest that is taking place in order to try and bring closure. But the consequence of this report was such that obviously three people, I think, have been sort of held accountable. It was the MEC who has been released from her duties, and the Director General of the provincial health department, and the Director of Mental Health in the province. And then we did a second report at Tower Hospital that dealt with mental health, and we know that as a consequence of that, the person who brought the allegations has since left the country. I think because of the findings of this report, he now lives in New Zealand, most probably looking after sheep rather than people, but hopefully he's having fun there. And then we have just completed our third investigations into the management and treatment of a young COVID patient at Tembisa Hospital. And I'm aware that the report is now being used in many hospitals as a template for how I think hospitals and doctors and nurses can look after patients with this sort of things. I just thought the impact of any study of an ombud in any other sector, it's very important, and I just wanted to illustrate that with those three reports. The second slide that you can put on is really something that I want to share with this committee, that the Office of the Health Ombud in South Africa was established in 2016, in June. And this office has only been staffed by two people. And I have taken a comparative analysis of many offices of ombuds throughout the world, but I thought I would use the one from the UK because we visited them and had a week to spend with them to learn some best practices and some the way in which things are done. The Office of the Parliamentary Health Office in the UK is staffed by 450 people, located in two cities, in Manchester and in London. It has a budget of 620 million, and we have a budget of 20 million in comparison. The office, our own public protector in South Africa, is estimated to be about 340 million. This is just food for thought for the committee. The legal framework for my office is that I'm appointed by the minister and I report to the minister. I don't report to the board of the OHSC, and I have very little to do with the board of the OHSC, although my office is located within the OHSC. The Parliamentary Health Ombuds, it's appointed in the UK by the UK Parliament and reports directly and is monitored directly by Parliament, just like you are monitoring what I do. And as I want to state here for a fact, is that offices of health ombuds or ombudsmen, everywhere in the world that I've looked, are fully independent internationally, and they are standalone offices. I just thought I would bring these issues, as I have brought them in your predecessors, that we are at the moment in the process of trying to redraft, I think, the bill for the Office of the Health Ombud in relation to its budget and its locus standi and its accountability. And I would urge your committee, comrades, to accelerate this process I'm now almost 5 years into my position. I've been fighting this for the past 5 years, and I'm just about to retire. So I suspect that this office will be fully established when I'm no longer there, but I would be very happy that it actually becomes a standalone committee. I will hand over to Mr. Toller to deal with the issues of complaints and assessment, and then he will be followed by Ms. Petwana on the investigations, and then we can take questions. Mr. Toller, it's your turn. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rob, and members of the Portfolio Committee on Health, the chairperson, as well as my colleagues. It gives me a pleasure to present the next two slides that deals with the statistical information within the Complaint Center and Assessment Unit. Generally, when you look on the slide, particularly the one on the left, you would note that it speaks about the complaints that have been registered in the five-year period that the health ombudsman was appointed in office. And we are seeing an upward trend in terms of the number of complaints that are registered, which basically tells us that the footprint of the health ombudsman is really coming to realization that we are seeing our public users of services, as well as those from the private health sector, coming through and lodging their complaints. Then the one on the right, basically what it does is try to unpack the 2,429 complaints that were received in the year under review. And what we are noting there, without going into the figures, is that Gauteng has a significantly higher number of complaints that we are receiving. This may be related to the fact that the Gauteng population may be having greater awareness of the work of the health, but particularly based on the Life Epidemia as well as the Tembisa Hospital investigations that was undertaken. But we are also noting that the rural provinces generally have got a lower, you know, complaint intake. And this might mean two things. It might either, on the other hand, be argued that it means within your rural provinces there may be effective complaint resolution mechanisms that are employed by health establishments, or subsequently it may mean that people are not really at liberty to raise complaints and have not have a clear understanding of the work that the health ombudsman is doing. But more importantly, because this is an area of concern for us, so what we constantly do as the Office of the Health Ombudsman, together with the communications and stakeholder unit within the OHSC, is to undertake community engagement visits so that we empower our communities on the powers of the health ombudsman. And what we are seeing in these rural provinces, the difference is that with Eastern Cape, at least they are at 174 complaints that were received, and it might also be the impact of the investigation that was done at Tower Hospital. Next slide, please. Now, in this slide, what we are trying to demonstrate is the status of complaints. And you will note that within the complaint center, there was about 2,213 complaints that were closed directly in the call center. And these were complaints that we generally would have risk rated low, because they are quick to be dealt with within the call center. And by the time we closed the books for 2020-21, we had 185 complaints that were open, but 31 of these complaints were assigned outside the call center to the assessment unit, where then a determination will be made through a desktop exercise whether the complaint needs to be resolved or referred for investigation. Then on the right-hand side, what we are seeing is the work that was done by the assessment unit. And what we tried to do is to look at the number. The blue represents the number of all open complaints per province. And if you look at the orange, it then tells you the number of complaints that were resolved. You would have noted in the presentation by the OHSC, one of the issues that was sharply raised was the fact that this is one of the programs where there's inadequate numbers of staff. So we had a number of backlog cases that we had to carry from the previous financial years that were still in our books. They were open. But gladly, one can indicate that of the 285 cases that were within the assessment unit, 174 of them were closed, which accounted to 61% of the cases that were generally closed. And this was work that was done by seven team members, two of them being on contract, 1 year contract posts. And these are some of the things that in the OHSC presentation they were explored further onto. Thank you, colleagues. I'll hand over to Mepetwani to deal with the investigation.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the honorable members. My name is Helen Twani. I'm the senior investigator responsible for healthcare cases. Okay, I'm going to present on the complaints investigation. In terms of the complaints investigation in the reporting period of 2021 financial year, a total of 7 cases were referred for investigation. Of the 7 cases that were referred, 2 were investigated within 6 months, and 1 was resolved within 6 months. It is important to indicate the timeline that we are dealing with our complaints, because the complaints that are assigned to complaints investigations are of extreme and high risk rated nature. Therefore, the procedural regulations stipulates that the complaints of the health ombuds should be investigated within 6 months unless they are extended due to their complexity. Of the 5 cases that were assigned, it is important to indicate that those 5 were assigned within the 4th quarter of the financial year. Therefore, their completion was scheduled for the new financial year. So it is important to note, as much as they were, we received 7 in total, the 5 were assigned in the last quarter of the financial year. And then the unprecedented situation of COVID impacted negatively on the performance of the unit in such a way that the investigators were unable to conduct on-site investigation at health establishments. So with that, an opportunity that the investigators took was to reflect on the processes to refine how we do things in order to suit the new normal. With that, we were able to deal with 10 backlog cases, because we have backlog cases emanating from the time that the unit was established in 2021. Due to limited investigative capacity, we accumulate backlog cases. Therefore, in the reporting period, we were able to deal with 10 backlog cases. We managed to review our processes in such a way that we are able to interview some of the witnesses virtually, and we conduct also desktop investigations that has proven at least to expedite the turnaround time of complaints resolution. It is important also to indicate that the consistent constraint which results in protracted turnaround time for case resolution is attributed to the limited investigative capacity that emanates from 2016-2017 when the unit was established. So the unit functions with three investigators since its establishment. The reflection of this graph just indicates the number of cases that were assigned for investigation. Of these investigations, one was resolved within 6 months. This is the case that the investigators worked with the health ombud, as stipulated by the law or our legislation, to say that the health ombud can be assisted by investigators from the OHSD. So this was done with the health ombud. And then the other two cases that are reflected in blue is just to reflect that those were the cases that emanated from the reporting period of 1920. Those were eligible for investigation within 6 months when we started the financial year. So this will tally with what the CEO has presented earlier on, where the CEO indicated that the investigators dealt with 9 cases and were able to resolve 1 case, which translated into 11.1% achievement. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Helen. Thank you,
Sandy. Unmute myself. Thank you, Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. That is really our brief presentation of what we have been able to do. I think importantly, it's the fact that we collaborate a lot with the Parliamentary Health Ombud in the UK. We receive a lot of support from the UK government in terms of what we do, doing lateral studies that we want to do, like, the, for example, evaluating the impact of our investigations and so forth. But more importantly, I think we appreciate the support that we receive, I think, from the minister and his deputy and the portfolio committee. However, we do face these challenges that I have enunciated, that maybe I would want to learn from this new committee as to how we can navigate them as the year goes by. But thank you for the opportunity, I think, to allow us to share with you what we have been up to and what we are able to achieve. And hopefully, it's all in the interest of improving the quality of service and in the quality of respecting norms and standards that should be the bedrock, I think, of the health system of our country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Prof, and your team. It's quite a revelation that you're giving us, considering the importance of your office, and we are aware that this is not the first time that you have raised this with us. In fact, you've raised it over the last 2 years as well. I think what I'm taking from this is that there is a redraft of the bill for the Office of Health Ombud, so that seems to be a step in some direction towards where you think this office should go. And us as parliamentarians, the question would remain, what could we do to assist this very important office to be able to perform its functions? You've actually raised it in terms of of two sentences, you said that it's important for me to function, to implement the norms and standards which are required in South Africa. And number two, that quality health services are given to all the people of South Africa. So in that context, I would hope that the members will engage with you and also raise any solutions they might be able to offer towards assisting this office to become financially independent and, as you said, a standalone office, and that you'd also be able to appoint more staff and we take this office to where it is supposed to be going. So thank you very much. I see there are two members who have raised their hands to ask questions. It is firstly Honorable Ismail. She's saying that she's having a network problem. We'll have to see when she has to raise her voice. And then secondly, Honorable Sukacha. Thirdly, Honorable Slengwa. Any other members?
Yes, please, Chairperson. Honorable Wilson.
Honorable Wilson, number four. Any other? Thank you very much. Let's start with Honorable Ismail. I hope you are okay with the network now, and we'll take it in the order I've raised it. It's Ismail, Sukacha, Wilson, and then Slengwa. Honorable Ismail, you've not unmuted, so I don't know whether you are able to speak. If not, we'll go to Honorable Sukacha.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me thank Prof and his team for the comprehensive report that he gave us. I think we have noted the what they could manage to achieve with a limited staff. And we have also noted what the challenges of that office is. I actually don't have a question, Prof. Just an interest. You said you went to the UK and you benchmarked on how they are doing things and so on. My interest was just, Prof, why did you not think that it will also be best to have a benchmark clearer home in Africa? Probably what might be the situation in Africa if they've got offices like this closer home, so that we have two experiences abroad and closer home as well. That's not the only thing that I wanted to check, Honorable Chairperson, but I really want to appreciate the hard work that Prof is doing with the limited staff that is at his disposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to Professor Makoba. You and I have come face to face on several occasions. I'm a long-serving member of this portfolio, and I just find it so desperately, desperately sad to find that after all these years, we still sit with the same situation. It's how any ombudsman, particularly with the health situation in South Africa and taking into account the COVID that we have faced and the myriad of challenges we've faced with COVID and what is principally a failing health system in general, and those are the words of the Fiscal Finance Commission, is still sitting in this boat. And I'm not sure what the way forward is. I'm glad to hear that there is a bill en route. But I put it to you, Dr. To Professor Makoba and Dr. Jacobs, you as the chairperson, that I think some kind of urgent meeting needs to be held with the portfolio of health, with the Health Ombuds Office, where we can put some of these things on the table in front of the minister and find a way forward. We cannot be sitting with people who have unresolved cases, whose lives have been put in jeopardy, where lives have been lost, and we are unable to deal with these situations and assist these people because Professor Makhoba has got his hands tied. It's an unacceptable situation. And I really believe that we need to have an urgent meeting, workshop with the ombuds himself and his team, with the minister, with the portfolio of health and whatever other relevant stakeholders are involved here to have this situation addressed and sorted out. It is tragic, and it's an ongoing situation, and we're going backwards. We're going backwards. We're talking about the suffering of people, and that is unacceptable. And I think, Professor, you have my support. You've always had my support. I think, Dr. Jacobs, we need to do something urgent with regards to this. So it's not a question as such. It is a statement. But Professor Makhoba, you need a medal. Your team needs a medal. I salute you for what you do. And I'm not sure how you get any sleep at night because you must be tormented by what you have to face. And I thank you for the great work that you do.
Thank you, Masengwa. You were skipped there, but I thought let it go. Can you continue?
We greet the professor and the team and welcome a wonderful briefing, an eye-opener to us as a portfolio committee, as people who work with people down at the grassroots level who are very much disturbed and upset about our hospital. Mine is not a question, Professor, but it's just clarity. Then if one wants to complain, what must I have in June not a complain forward the complaint of the Stolle family to our secretary, to our old chairperson, Dr. Lomo, and I nothing heard about that. Because this complaint happened at Endelval Hospital in Cadence Park. This woman was sent by their children in the hospital and she was admitted round about two, they got a
Honorable Sengwa, we have lost you. We can see you speaking, but we have lost your audio. Can you try again? You are muted now, Honorable Sengwa. Can you unmute yourself?
Thank you.
You can go ahead.
Thank you very much. This family were very much traumatized because their mother was admitted early in the morning and round about two, the hospital phoned them, then they should come and take their mother. When they arrived at 4 o'clock, they see their mother in the reception with Ben was on her and he was gasping and they lost their mother. Now children were traumatized, everybody were traumatized. Now they want to get something which is consoled them or somebody who can fold them at what they happen and what they see in that hospital. That was done on the 19th June 2021. 21 that is the tallest hill.
We again can't hear you, Honorable Sengwa.
Hello?
Yes, continue.
The further details I got, I forwarded to the Miss Machalamba because this family were complaining to launch a complaint. That's why I forward everything to Miss Machalamba so that we can do this on behalf of the family or on behalf of the committee.
Thank you, Masengwa, for those questions.
Thank you.
Any other members?
Chair, may I try?
Yes, you may. I've got your questions, but let's see if you can raise it yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for the presentation. Apologies if I do get cut off. I just have four questions. The first question, please explain the modalities used to move staff from the OHSC to the office and the implications thereof. How is it actually affecting both sections of the entity? Secondly, apart from the ombudsman, who else from the office participates in stakeholder interaction that is both locally and internationally on its behalf? My third question, there is a gradual increase of complaints over the years. In your view, what are the main contributors to this increase? And my last question, does the office have its own management and hold its management meetings without the involvement of the OHSC? Or do you actually discuss this as one entity, and how do you resolve going forward? Thank you, Chair. I hope I've...
Very audible. Thank you, Honorable Ismail. Any other members before I raise any points lastly? No. Prof, you know, you're really touching our hearts here. I must say, not only the doctors on the portfolio committee, so also the other members, and naturally doctors want to do good, so that's why I'm raising that. You're really putting an important point forward, and we have seen the important role that the health ombud could play, and I mentioned it earlier, in terms of assuring that there is somebody who is watching that people do receive quality health services, and that we are not faced with another tragedy like the life SED Mary tragedy. And so, of course, I hear what Honorable Wilson is saying with regards to an urgent meeting with yourselves, your team, and with the minister. I think this would also, you'd be able to speak about this in the context of the redrafted bill and where that process is, and you'd be able to inform us where that process is currently, and in which way would that redrafted bill affect the work that we do. In other words, how would we be able to have an effect on that bill, and whether we don't know at this point in time, one would assume that it would come to this portfolio committee. But in the interim, while a bill is being redrafted, which is a lengthy process, and the process of getting it to Parliament, and then for it to get to a portfolio committee, and then for that particular process, there is so much time that elapses that one would want to ask whether there is another process that can be followed. And that process would probably be what Honorable Wilson had suggested in terms of such a meeting. So I am actually asking you, Prof. Makhoba, to actually request such a meeting between ourselves, your office, and the office of the minister. And please do informally write to us. We can also, from our side, initiate it, but it would be good if you would initiate that from your side, because this is your third time that you're presenting your annual report to us. It's the same group. It's not a new group. It's the same group from 2019. And it's only a new chairperson. So we've noted it very well. Then what I do see, you're saying you're having a staff of two, but you're talking about a complaint center, a complaints investigation unit, an assessment unit, etc. So there's so many units, and I was wondering how people do the work. So I would assume you would have staff which are recruited on a temporary basis, if and when needed, and you'd be able to allude to that for us. Then Honorable Slengwa has mentioned a letter that had been written to the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee, and you should be able to indicate whether you had received that letter, or I would assume that letter will be coming to the Portfolio Committee. I don't know, Marcelo, you must maybe indicate more what you are referring to, and I think you spoke about the Sithole family, and I'm not very certain of that. But I myself don't really have questions apart from those comments for you, Prof. Makhoba, and your team. You may continue to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jacobs. Let me start by responding to the last comments. The last honorable member, I think, is Ismail. She asked whether when we have our own meetings, do we have it with the OHSC? The answer is no. We have our own meetings as the Office of the Health Ombud, and I'll explain to that. And what is the reason why complaints are increasing? I suppose one reason is that I think the office is getting more known, and also the fact that I think members of the office or members associated with the office, either through the OHSC, they go around the country, I think, to discuss, I think, the modus operandi of the Office of the Health Ombud. And so that may be the reason why the complaints are increasing. But also remember that the world is generally becoming more litigious, and often some of the complaints are not about norms and standards, but it's about people wanting to be remunerated for something that has happened in the hospital. So they confuse, I think, the role of the Office of the Ombud and the role of the Health Professional Council of South Africa. Who are the people who obviously promote, I think, the Office of the Health Ombud? Is both, I think, people from the OHSC and some members that are associated with the Office of the Health Ombud. What are the modalities that we use? The modalities are very simple. According to the Act, I am entitled to go to the Office of Health Standard and request assistance from the staff of the health of the Office of the Health Standard. So if I require investigators or if I require an inspection report, I don't have a unit of inspection. I've got to go to the CEO of the Office of Health Standard and say, we need an inspection in this health establishment. Can you release the following two or three people? Now, that is well and good if the people are not occupied with other things that the Office of Health Standards and Compliance do. But if they are, obviously, then I have to wait. So that modality is something that over time, we then have come to what I would call a gentleman's agreement between ourselves and the OHSC, that certain staff members or certain units from the OHSC could be seconded to the office of the Health Ombud. They are not employees legally of the Office of the Health Ombud. Like, for example, all the investigators are employees of the OHSC, but the work they do relates to what I do most of the time. So it's not a major problem. And as I say, all the inspectors are employed in the Office of Health Standards and Compliance, but if I need an inspection, I do request them. Like, for example, about a week ago, I needed a group of inspectors to go to the Eastern Cape because there is a fear there that the system is collapsing. and certain hospitals are not up to scratch. Livingstone, Dora Ginza, Uitenhage, and Mthatha Hospital. So I needed some general inspectorate to go there and do an inspection. So I've got those modalities to deploy in order to be able to do my work. I hope that answers Ms. Ismail's question. Mxolisi, you wanted to know why I didn't find a comparative a structure in Africa or somewhere close. The truth of the matter is there are no Office of Health Ombuds in the continent. And I suppose, like all colonized Africans, I'm colonized by the British, so it was easier to go and go there. But also, they took an interest in our office from the British Parliamentary Health Ombud, that they wanted to interact and relate to us. They sent us their British embassy here to invite us to. They funded 6 of my staff to go there and spend time with them. So it's a whole range of things that you do. But at the end of the day, you are correct. I should have gone to Kenya, Malawi, Zimbabwe. They don't have offices of health ombuds. Unfortunately, I looked for that. I couldn't find them. But if I wanted maybe to go to the original ombud, I should have gone to one of the Scandinavian countries. I couldn't go there. But we are in touch with them through the International Institute. In terms of Ms. Wilson, you know, one of my problems is I'm employed. And when you are employed and you don't want to do things that look like they are a conflict of interest. So you are doing things in your own interest rather than doing things in the interest of the well-being. I mean, I discovered this problem when I first started on the 16th, on the 16th of June, on the 1st of June in 2016, that the way the office was structured, the way the legal framework of the office was not the correct way that I knew offices of health ombuds operate. So, but, you know, in order to raise that, I came into this office really maybe with two purposes. I wanted to establish an office of the best quality that follows best international practices. And I wanted to be able to build capacity because I came into the office as a retired person. So I didn't have to build my CV. I just needed to do good public service and train young people. Now, I found that I couldn't do both. I couldn't train young people because I didn't have staff. So these are issues that have plagued me, I think, as the health ombud. That's why whenever I have an opportunity, I always take however many people I can take with me to go and experience the world out there and how offices of health ombud practices. In relation to Mama Hlengwa, the only way I can know whether we have received this complaint is if she can provide us with a reference number. My common sense tells me we haven't received that. But again, there is a way in which complaints are lodged. As Mr. Kohler has indicated, we have a complaint center. That complaint center receives the complaints and it does an assessment and an evaluation of that. It registers and references the complaint. Once we have that, we are able to take it forward. And as far as I know, we have not received anything from the Sithole family at the moment. But if I have, I'll be able to come back. In relation to the chair's issue that maybe I should come back and request a meeting, I think I will get my boss, I think, to write a note to yourself and the committee that we do need a meeting. Fortunately, the current minister was in the panel that appointed me, and the current deputy minister was my special advisor when I was vice chancellor, so I would be able to communicate a little bit more directly with them. But those are the answers that I have.
Thank you very much, Professor Makhoba. We
Any other members, finally, before I give any concluding remarks? Prof, we note everything that you have raised. I think we have said that we appreciate your presentation and also your service to the people of South Africa. We note the fact that there is no health ombuds in Africa, which is a very interesting detail that you just shared with us. And we also note that you will write the letter as requested so that we can so that this meeting can be initiated. You did not answer my question on where this redrafting of the bill, that process is now. Would you like to do that now?
Yeah, I could do that. I'm employed by the Department of Health and the Minister, and that's where the matter is. It's with the legal department of the Department of Health. Actually, the advocate there is Advocate Mabelo, who I've interacted with, and I've sent him a number of documents that illustrate how offices of ombuds are legally structured. And he told me the last time I met with him that he has taken the draft bill to the state law advisors or something like that. But I think when I write the letter to yourself, I will indicate where the process is and where he is in relation to the draft bill. But it is there somewhere. It has to come to Parliament so that it can enjoy the consultation process that we normally have for any bill. But as you know, that process also does take a long time, and it can only be facilitated through the Portfolio Committee of Health. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Prof. We're looking forward to that letter then, because it will also inform us. And then very lastly, on the point raised by Honorable Maslengwa, is Maslengwa, can you maybe liaise with Mr. I think it was Mr. Clawe.
Mr. Clawe.
It's a W I wrote here, yes. About sending that letter of yours to them, and then you can follow up with them so that, and also when you do that, is send that letter on to me also, or to our secretary of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Sangwa. I think that's where we are now. Thank you. Prof. Makhoba, any last words from you? And then I'm going to close this meeting.
No, I just want to thank, I think, the honorable members and the committee, I think, for being constructive. And all we can do is, I suppose, exercise some patience and just do the best that we can do for the country under the circumstances that are prevailing. But other than that, I want to thank you and your committee for giving us the opportunity to share with you what we are struggling with, but where we have successes and where we have impacts that are important, I think, in the development of the national health system on the road to realizing the NHI. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. So we're looking forward to further engagement with you. Hopefully not next year this time.
No.
Hopefully see you later. I'm really trying to encourage you to forward that letter. And
I'll do that before the end of the week. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we have come to the end of this meeting for today. Do not forget that we are plenary at 3 o'clock and that we will be meeting with the Department of Health on Friday. We have received a presentation and please make certain that you all do log in on Friday morning. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Dr. Jacobs and honorable members. Bye-bye.
Bye.